CliffCentral.com.
All right. Who does that? Matthew McConaughey, right? All right. It's Matthew McConaughey,
yeah.
It's Friday, so for anybody who's not particularly interested in Christmas, it's still the weekend. There's a reason to be excited. And it's our last show of the year, and we decided this last show we were going to bring on some big guns. So we got Joey Razdeen joining us in a little while, and Riyad Moussa, two of my favorite people in South Africa, two people who I'm always happy to see. Yes, it's Joey. You're close to your camera, hey? How's it, dude?
Riyad, I'm doing excellent. How about you there, Gatcliffe?
I'm lekker, man. Nice to see you. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, man. Apparently, yeah. Firstly, is the shadow of the sun on my face bad?
Yeah, but no, it's fine. It just you look like you're from God. It looks like angels are shining out of your forehead. It's fantastic. There we go. No, that's okay, lekker.
Yeah, no, that's a good bit.
That looks like a comfortable chair you're in. And is that your sneaker collection on the shelves behind you?
A part of my sneaker collection. Yeah,
that's lovely. Nice. Yeah, you should be on our. Yeah, we've got a feature called Collectomania where we talk about people with their collections, and I know you're into sneakers.
Yes. So I have a sneaker collection, and that's some of the once-offs that I still have.
Yeah.
Riyad was complaining that I think the link that he's got is an old link. So.
Oh shit.
So I think they might send him a new link quickly.
All right. Well, we'll get Simpiwe to sort that out and get him on. I want to see you both. So you good, Joey? How have you been this year? How things going, dude?
Yeah, it's bad. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yo. It was really hard. So material was basically supposedly a thing that was going to be, because it was postponed, so we were going to release it last year.
Right.
And then because of COVID, it was postponed to this year, but we didn't know there was going to be a new version called Omnia.
Yes.
Omnia. And then the same day, we released material. The premiere of material was the same day that our wonderful scientists discovered that there was a bra from Holland that came here with Omnia or Omicron or whatever that is.
Yeah.
So the same day material released was same day that this new version of Corona was found. So
that's the timing is terrible. But obviously, you know, that's just the premiere. But it doesn't matter because people are still going to watch it, right? And they can get it.
Yes, they. It's on box office right now.
Right.
It's on box office right now. So you can go check it out on box office right now.
Well, that sounds good.
And then I think it's at certain cinemas is still playing. Like at the small independent cinemas, like I know the Bioscope at 44 Stanley.
Nice.
They still have it. So you can go out on a date there and take your mochi and come and hang out there.
So Joey, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about material too when we get Riyad on in a moment, because I just wanted to find out how things are going with you, because I mean, you've been kind of part of our family. We see you often. You've been to the studio with your kids. You know, we know you well, and I know comedy's been almost impossible over the last 2 years. We had Dumi Morake on earlier this week, and she was telling me it's up and down. There are like some places where you can get like 40 people in. A lot of people have been doing this online stuff, but that doesn't really work because you can't see the audience and you can't react to the audience. How's it been for you?
So you get used to the online stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the online corporate stuff is easier to do than the online your own show stuff. So the online corporate stuff is like the corporate people is used to having Zoom meetings and having Microsoft Teams or whatever, or StreamYard even. And then, so they're used to sitting in front of their computer, listening to somebody speak. So that is a bit, so it helped us a bit, or it helped me in that they used to it. Whereas if some random person that just love comedy that is not au fait with Zoom or with online meetings, they'll be like, what's going on here? Oh my goodness. Yes, the dog, whatever. The dog is there. Don't worry. Dolores, can you keep quiet? I'm trying to listen to this, Briar. So, whereas A corporate is already like they listen to the CEO speak. The CEO is like, yes, today we wanted to do it live, but because of protocols and blah, 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 we have, and then it's easier that way.
Right.
So the mind shift. So there's a mind shift. Like even now, we are doing this interview. So instead of me coming to the studio, we're doing this. So people that watch you often or people that's used to online stuff, don't find it as, irrational, anymore.
Right.
Whereas if you do the online stuff as your own show and people try and buy tickets to that, it becomes irrational because they have this thought in their head that you are going to be exactly the same like you would have been if you were performing at a Lyric.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you have experience of 2 years in, oh, that's it from me, or raising your hand,
right,
or if you have that culture, then it's easier. So, yeah, it's changing. So the way we interact with people is changing. My son was speaking about this new thing that Elon Musk invested in, where it's going to be like Star Wars holograms, where you're going to be in the person's room. Yeah,
that's
like
phenomenal.
In Japan and in certain places, it's already where they have virtual online meetings, but everybody's in the same boardroom. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I love that because that was always one of the things in Star Wars that I thought would be cool. You could, instead of your phone and everything just being flat on your phone, you'd pick it up and then this person would like – their hologram would emerge and you could see them in 3D. That would be bloody amazing. Ah, here he is.
Tupac was like at Coachella.
Yes, that's
at
right.
Coachella.
Yeah, that's yes. Right. They did that. Here's Riyad. Hey, Riyad Musa. How the hell are you, man?
I'm fine. Sorry, I apologize.
No stress.
The wrong link.
So listen, Joey told us that you guys premiered on the same day that they announced the Omnicon. What is it again? Leanne, what is it called?
Omnicron.
Yes, Omnicron. There's so many anagrams. Veronica's my favorite one.
How cuck is that?
Yeah, there was a new variant to go with new material. Like, that was, like, very horrible.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, let me just tell you.
It's so weird. And like, like, we were all ready.
Yeah.
And so on that opening weekend, it came out on the was it the Friday or the Thursday?
We were in Durban, and then the next morning there's this Omicron thing. So the Wednesday we were all in Durban, and in the Thursday morning, the scientists came and said, "Yo, we found this thing, guys. Yo, were you?"
But I mean, okay, so that's comedic timing for you, if nothing else. But you, well, listen, all I have to say up front is congratulations. A new material. First of all, I can't believe that the original movie was 2012, dude. It doesn't feel like that long ago.
Yeah.
2012.
It's a lifetime, man.
It'll be 10 years next year. So you've decided to put it out anyway. And as Joey told us, it's on box office, so people can go watch it there. But there are some cinemas where you can go and see it too if you like the cinema experience. So tell me a little bit about the movie, because there are going to be a lot of people who want to go and see it. And also where it came from, why you decided to do a sequel, what's new, what's different, all that kind of thing.
Well, you know, we never planned to do a sequel. Like, I didn't plan to do the first one. Mm. The first one is essentially, based on Ronnie Aptiaker's musings after watching me doing a stand-up comedy show many, many, many years ago in Cool Runnings.
Yes.
He's like, Riyad, you're a doctor comedian. It's an interesting story. You should develop a script. And at that time, I was still doing medicine. You know, and I was like, I got ward rounds tomorrow. I don't know what the heck you're talking about. And 7 years after that, we had manifested this movie, which kind of made itself.
Yeah.
That's the truth about material. It made itself. We never planned to do it. Just started, you know, it completely developed organically. And with new material, I wrote the first draft of new material.
Uh-huh.
Right? 2016, I finished the first draft. 1st of January 2016, I wrote the movie over 3 months.
Wow.
Right? And it was, to be honest, it was very bad.
because like I wrote it over 3 months, but I think it took Craig and Robbie 4 years to fix what I wrote.
Wow.
When we eventually showed Joey the script. I think, was it that true, Joey? I don't know. I think we got your script
I remember
earlier than that.
Yes, I think the first script that I got was I don't want to give away the plot, but there were certain things in the first script that is not in the movie. And and I'm like glad that the stuff that's in the first is not in the movie. So that was the first script. And then I remember we went to a workshop like a couple of times at Craig's house. And that was in 2017, I think.
Which Craig? Yeah. Who's Craig? Tell us, who's Craig?
Craig Frymont.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the writer director initially that we got put into contact with for the first film with material. Now, when I wrote the thing, so essentially it's about, Kasim is working as a comedian now, right? And he's encountering more of the darker side of the entertainment industry, like his father warned him about in the first film. Essentially that it's about. And so it's a more mature story. And my first draft was darker because you're grappling with progress and ambition. Essentially it's the themes of family responsibility versus personal ambition. Now I've got 4 kids. I've been overpopulating the earth.
Yeah. You're filling it up.
But at the same time, I have aspirations to progress as a comedian on many fronts, and you know that manifests in a lot of like conflict.
Absolutely.
Internal conflict and practical conflict at home. And I think that essentially is the underlying theme of the film, and the tagline is "All roads lead to home." And how powerful the pull of relationships and family is in this whole dynamic. So that's the underlying theme. But on top of that, there's a lot of jokes also.
I'm very excited. Listen, I loved material. I don't think anybody in South Africa who saw it didn't love it to pieces. It was an absolute masterstroke. And you say it just kind of came together, but my God, it looked extremely slick when it was on screen, and you guys were just amazing. And what I love about you two, and you know, it's compliment time. I mean, we're at, it's Christmas and everything, and I saved having you two for the last show, for our last show of the year, because I love seeing you two, and I love hearing the way you think. You're both extremely funny people, but you're also both really intelligent people. And to add to that, you don't mind getting a bit dark. Like Joey, you and I have had some seriously deep conversations about some horrible shit, and you've got like insightful takes on this stuff. You've both lived pretty interesting lives, and it hasn't always been, sunshine and happiness. You're okay to go there. You both of you have depths to reach into, which I'm not going to say other comedians don't have them, but what you do, and you do it so well, you make it look effortless to tell these stories. And I think you guys make it okay for other people to feel cuck sometimes.
I'll tell you a quick story. I think it was August this year, and I went through a very bad patch. I went through a vulnerable, bad patch, depression of note. Like, depression is real. And Riyadh basically spoke to me for that entire week, every single day for at least an hour.
Sure.
Like, not because he wanted to, not because he just, because it was a normal thing for him to be able to speak to me for an hour daily just to get my mind straight. Because it was not a lack of place to be in. I was in a very dark, bad place. Hmm. And then here's this guy that out of his own just calls me. So people don't know that part of our relationship. And I'm glad certain aspects of that part of the relationship comes through in the movie very it's poignant. It's very poignant in the movie itself, where there's certain parts where Riyadh walks in. You know that ex that you have, and then you still love the ex, and then you like go and stalk her or him at certain places. So there's parts of the movie where Kasim actually does that, but not because of stalking, because of finding himself again. Mm. And coming back to the depressive state, it's like, yeah, because this year was such a dark year and a bad year for all of us, specifically for me, here's a bra that just called me out of the blue, and we spoke for like 3 hours, and he got in trouble with his wife.
Riyadh,
for speaking to me too much.
Riyadh, did you know that he needed you at that stage? Or did you get some kind of feeling, or had you been speaking to him and you thought?
Yeah, we had an idea that he needed some support, and actually a number of my comedian friends,
the close ones.
And we decided to talk because, Joey and I have always had a very interesting relationship. Like, we don't spend a lot of time together, but whenever we sort of interact, there tends to be a depth to it. Mm. Right? It's weird because Yusuf is actually, he's very spiritual. As you said, he's very deep. Mm. He's got a wealth of life experience,
Right.
Both extremely positive, very negative, a lot of highs and a lot of lows, you see, like, I connect to that, also because, like, I'm one of these, like, I walk on the line. Mm. This is me, right? But I'm not the person who's off the line. I step over the line and I go back. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, Yusuf will bloody run over that line. Right? That is his instinct. Right? Because he's got, this is like an inner purpose. And I don't know what it is. And I'm very drawn to, that instinct. Because I it's like so far from who I am.
Yeah. Right? You're much more controlled.
Not far from who I am, but I'm way more controlled, but we do both connect in terms of, like, I think at the level of heart.
What you're saying to us here, Riyadh, is that essentially, I mean, this character, I know a lot of people try to separate the character from the real life inspiration, but it sounds like a hell of a lot of Yusuf is Joey, and Joey is Yusuf. I mean, it's just like there's no getting away from this. Like, no one else could play that role, and you couldn't have based that character on anyone else.
No, this is almost like, I mean, even the role of Kasim is an alternate reality. Mm. So there's a lot, even in the first one. I drew on a lot of personal experience, right? Yeah. It wasn't my story per se, because the stakes weren't high enough, essentially. I was like, oh, you don't get to be a comedian. You have to settle for being a doctor in the Indian community. Oh, boo-hoo. Boo-hoo.
I can tell you this. In the second one, there is more personal experiences and more things that did happen to him than in the first one. So the first one was more but made upish, and the story was just, but in the second one, real experiences was drawn from. And that's what makes the second one much better for me in my observations and in my personal views. I know the second one is better than the first one, just because it's more truthful, just because it's more real, and just because the story is, because in the first one, we just wanted to make a movie, like Riyadh said, it just happened by itself. Yeah. Whereas the second one, the purpose was, what value can we add to, specifically from Riyadh, what value can we add on screen, using these characters,
right?
And obviously we drew from personal experiences, and I think the value that new material adds specifically to my community, specifically to the Malay colored community of the apartheid era, the value is invaluable.
Sure.
Because when you watch the movie, but this is one of the few movies I wish my parents was alive so that I could see it.
One of the few.
If my mother watched this, then she would have been proud. Yes, what did you say, sir?
No, I just also love the fact that you guys can have this real off-screen friendship, which, you know, you support each other when times are tough, that kind of thing. I mean, Riyad, it doesn't seem like much to you because you obviously are that kind of person. But I love that you would call your friend and talk to him through the tough times and, you know, kind of have these hour-long conversations where your wife was getting the murrin with you. This is very special because guys don't talk like this often, and most guys are embarrassed to admit that they actually care about each other. And I do think this is important. You know, we live in a country where we're always talking about GBV and there's serious things going on. But like when men actually support each other and do the right thing and help each other and are true friends, I think that's worth celebrating.
Yes, yeah. Yes, definitely. And to be honest also, because I'm like coming on like this, like I say all the right things all the time. I actually embarrassed my friend many years ago was it the Comics Choice Awards?
I can't remember.
Okay, but it was many years ago.
In my mind, I know there's only twice, I think twice in your life I called you out. One time was that time, and the other time was something very personal, and I called you out on that. The other times, and then you called me out on lots of things. Oh my God, guys. Yeah, Riyad was like a big brother father.
Okay,
like,
but what happened?
In his nice way.
But what did you, but what did you do at those awards? Now we all want to know.
No, it was like I made a joke because I was roasting a lot of the people in the room, in a sense, in my acceptance speech. Right. Now,
I remember that. The second Comics Choice Awards. So Riyad Horn, like the second ever best comic in South Africa at the Comics Choice Awards, was you. Ne? Or was it the first one?
It was the first one.
So the first ever best comic ever in South Africa in a Comics Choice Awards was Riyad. So now we all voted for this guy. Yeah. So I voted. Everybody voted for this guy. And then tell the story, finish.
No, you tell it from your perspective.
So I'm sitting there in the audience and I'm like, and I'm nominated. So I'm nominated. Riyad is nominated. Lottering, I think, was nominated. David Kao.
Hola.
Gola is nominated and Riyad wins, but Riyad is not in the audience. Riyad is at home because he's got children or whatever. And then they play this video of his acceptance speech, and in this acceptance speech he says, me and Javera, and material is just releasing. It's releasing the November or December that year. And he says, and me and Joey, we're doing the same material in November this time. And the crowd in the audience go, No, he said, Joey.
The punchline was as if, like, I don't remember it clearly, as if I was saying he is, like, doing my material, right?
Yes.
And at that time, there was this issue like, because it was a gag, like, about that, because there was this issue about Trevor
Trevor stealing people's material.
So
I remember that was a big deal.
Around that time, right? So I did that gag, and then because it was a video, right, afterwards I said, no, I'm just teasing, me in a movie called Material together,
and nobody
heard but
that.
Because the laugh was so massive, it kind of drowned all of that out, right? Completely drowned it out because it was a video playing.
So it was actually
a big thing.
People
thought
Joey was a material thief.
It was a huge thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus,
and
guys.
Then you get calls and you're like, are you doing Riyad's material? And I'm like, how is it even possible for me to do Riyad's material? Like, it's impossible for me to do Riyad's material and vice versa. But that time we were still naive and young and obviously. And then I was like, no, we're speaking about the movie.
Yeah.
But you know how people are. Yeah. They look past that.
No,
they
no, no. Past. Now forevermore, you're going to be the guy who steals Riyadh's material. So I'm. This happens. I mean, listen, I get labeled with shit that I did 10 years ago in radio that nobody, I think nobody remembers, but that's all they know about me. Riyadh, I want to be serious for a second because you've got this initiative called The Best Medicine. And I mean, we all hear that laughter is the best medicine, right? And you have this amazing ability to cover both these overlapping areas. And you're the only person who seems to be able to overlap these areas where it's comedy and medicine. But you also talk about the laughter business and how difficult that is and how so many people in the laughter business are not happy people. How important is, because laughter, they say, is this involuntary thing, right? You can't make someone laugh. They have to, they have to laugh, and sometimes they don't even choose to. It's just something funny happens, and they just start laughing. So there's something magical about it, right? How much do we know about this? And tell me about this initiative.
So the Best Medicine started from, you know, it's always been a big interest of mine to somehow collate my two careers, you know, because I never planned not to do medicine.
Yes.
Right? I always wanted to be a doctor.
Yes.
But then I just found this thing, stand-up comedy, this thing that I just completely was consumed by. That's the truth. I was consumed by this thing. And you know, as your life progresses, you know, start to mature. And also, you know, you try to add different levels to you as a person. And initially when you do stand-up comedy, you know, the layers are, you know, very superficial and, you know, there's less of a depth to it. So as you get older, you want more depth and substance. And so now I'm trying to do that and trying to do something that is unique, where I talk about, you know, the benefits of laughter, because there are a lot of benefits of laughter from, first of all, physiological perspective, like just the act of laughing improves respiration, like drops your blood pressure, improves your cardiac output, right? It improves your T lymphocyte immune response. Mm-hmm. There are endorphins released, which are body's natural painkillers, right? There's even this guy called Norman Cousins. He initially wrote this book. Well, he wrote this book many years ago called The Anatomy of an Illness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it describes how he like postulated, because he had a condition known as ankylosing spondylitis, which is a hectic spinal condition, which causes like debilitation of the spine, right? Sheesh. Over, you know, a short period of time. Now it's an autoimmune condition. So, we all know that autoimmune conditions are made worse by stress, right? So he like hypothesized that if autoimmune conditions like this are made worse by stress, right? What if positive emotions, you know, positive ideas, you know, laughter, creativity, things of that nature. What does that have? What effect does that have on conditions? And he started to treat himself with these sort of therapies, one of them being laughter therapy, right? He used to watch lots and lots of funny things, right, over and over. And he found that if you could get like a solid, like 15 minutes of laughter session, it would actually give him about 2 hours of pain-free sleep. And he actually, his condition improved over a period of time. Now, this is obviously anecdotal evidence, but also, this is sort of, you know, sparked alongside, you know, this guy, Patch Adams, right?
Yeah,
who was played by Robin Williams. Right.
He was a real guy. He had a proper clinic in like upstate New York or something, right?
Yes. He's still around. You know, the Gesund, I actually met him at a corporate, and he's not like a funny dude. He's actually a serious guy. He's a serious dude who utilizes humor.
Right. And it's called the Gesundheit.
He utilizes humor as a tool.
It's called the Gesundheit Institute, right?
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Amazing stuff.
So all of this, you know, got me to thinking about, you know, how to put this across there, because there's so much nuance to it. What type of humor you use, what type of humor is positive and what is negative, because there's also a darker side of humor in itself, right?
Yeah.
And depends on how people look at humor and whether it's too soon. There's a concept of too soon, because I think Carol Burnett said tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Right, exactly.
Because, like,
which is why
while
still,
people are experiencing.
We still can't laugh about Amelia Earhart. It's still too soon, right?
But you see now what it is. It's how you approach it. So comics, we can laugh about anything. Yeah. People who utilize you, you know that because you are approaching it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then there are other people who are unable to this because when you are in the tragedy, people can't laugh at something because yes. Laughter is about survival.
Right.
At the end of its day, you can laugh at anything as long as you feel you can survive it.
Right.
Like
that's
this
good.
Is why it's funny when the Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote falls off a cliff and you see him like dying over and over again because he's alive in the next scene, right? Like he was dead, like
did you ever notice
just be a tragedy.
Ever, in the '80s when we were growing up, did you ever notice on TV all those TV shows that I mean you guys are like almost in my generation. I think we kind of see the same things. All those shows that we used to watch, like the A-Team and all that shit. They always used to show when there was a car accident or something. They'd always show the people getting out. And I never realized it until I watched one as an adult. And I thought, this is, first of all, cheesy as hell. But second of all, they always showed that the people survived. In other words, when there was an explosion or whatever, they'd show the people scrambling out of it so that you knew they were okay. And as kids, I suppose that's important so that you can enjoy it. Otherwise, it's like, you know, you're showing people dying. And I wonder about these movies, these very kind of real movies that kids watch now, and you think, yes, they're not growing up like we did, where they see that the people are okay.
Yes, the idea of survival is it's very important, and I think that's what also draws me to comedy. It's like it's a therapeutic tool it's not necessarily having survived it, but mentally being in the space that you can survive something. You know, you're going to get over this. Because if you're going to laugh at something, you have to believe that.
Yeah.
You know? So aside from the psychological benefit of that, is also the physiological, like just what happens naturally. If you just sit there without any sort of psychological change and go, ha, 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 and you push that and you'll feel euphoric.
Of course, people are going to think you need to be locked up in a mental asylum, but yes, that's a good point.
Yes.
Joey?
No, I just want to come in here quickly. As you know, Gareth, we had like deep conversations and stuff. I think with comedy, catharticism is the best for comedy makes it work the best. Because, you know, a cathartic experience is when you use your art to get over a depressive state.
Absolutely.
So, so comedy is the best way where, for me, and obviously an artist like Picasso or Monet, I don't know, where you use your art to get over a depressive state. And what Riyad was explaining is that we as comics find most things funny, but we need to be cognitive of the fact that certain things that we might think is funny, the audience, because they're not on a level of consciousness that comedians are, for instance, won't find that funny. And that responsibility we need to take seriously. And that's why my mother always used to say, you become like the people you hang out with.
Yeah.
Now, I remember 20 years ago when we started Pio Monati Show, and Riyad was when we did writing workshops in Pio Monati Show. People don't know this. It's like Loy, myself, Salah Sabitri, Riyad. We had fights. We had basically like intellectual fights, like it was hardcore fights. But what it did was it made me as a person go, wow, here is guys that sees the world exactly the way I see the world, and on a constant basis, whether we got paid or not, it was value added to my life. I don't think there is any other industry or any, I'm lucky. So I'm lucky that I've been exposed to that. you've been exposed to Kagiso Ladiga and David Kao on a daily basis and Luiso Gola on a daily basis. Now, me, you, and Riyad, we're on the same age level type vibe.
Yeah.
So we all like 70s, mid-70s babies. And then you have Lue, who's an 80s baby. So he comes with a completely new way of thinking. Although it's like maybe 6 years apart.
Yeah.
But that 6 years apart is like a huge difference. My kids now is addicted to anime. Like, my kids love anime. So we're watching Spirited Away and Ghost in a Shell and Castle in a Rooftop, whatever, all these things. And it's violent. It's violent. You're like, yo, I can't believe you're making these things.
Yeah.
Kids. And we're all enjoying this. But the stories behind that, so it just makes me think how far ahead is the Japanese culture in thinking about the
I check what they do in Japan and some of the things they come up with and the way people just the way they kind of ritualize ordinary stuff and I think that they're just so they're so advanced in so many ways and I don't like stereotypes for obvious reasons but my God I always think like there's something going on there that the rest of us have to catch up with at some point and I
Shinto.
I'm telling you, dude, maybe it's that. Maybe it's the religion. But listen, I wanted to ask you both because we often have spoken about like the more, you know, the darker side of comedy and all that stuff. Do you still feel pressure, both of you? Because this is something that ordinary people don't have to think about. But do you feel pressure to have to be the funniest person, to have to make other people laugh? Because it's one thing to be paid to do it on stage. It's one thing to be involved in a project like New Material, for example. But on the day-to-day stuff, you know, people come to you and maybe it's just family and friends or maybe it's complete strangers. And they kind of sit there with an expectation that you're not going to make them laugh. There's a lot of pressure involved in that.
So can I answer that first? Firstly, I don't before. Now I'm old enough and I have more experiences enough. Despite what you think, I think Riyad and Gareth, you guys that know me personally will know, I have social anxiety. It's a real thing. It's a real thing. I didn't know I have it until recently. I have social anxiety. And one of that was because of the pressure of always trying to make stupid jokes. Whereas, and then you realize that, no, man, I'm just a normal person.
Yeah.
And then you have to be true to yourself, where you have to go and say, but also TikTok and Instagram Live helped with those things.
Sure.
Where you can go and say, no, brah, I don't need to be funny all the time. Because if you are an accountant, you don't use Excel spreadsheets all the time. You don't. You don't.
Yeah.
If you are, Riyad is a doctor. Are you going to go tell me a joke while you clean my pancreas or whatever? You don't know. So but it comes with experience. So imagine you were like Sohail is another guy, Sohail Essa, who's also a doctor, and he did some locums for my cousin, who's a doctor in Bosman. So now, where my cousin is a doctor, Dr. Fams, is a colored community where the people queue at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's the whole day.
Yeah.
So she doesn't even have lunch. So she'll get guys to do locums. So hey, went for a locum there, and he's like, "Yo, Joey, bruh, how is this possible?" Then I was like, because she doesn't charge the people, firstly. And secondly, if the people want a
prescription,
a note to say they don't. Not even a prescription, just a note to say I was sick yesterday for the work.
Notes, yeah.
And then she will sort him out and stuff. And then we get like, so I'll tell you a funny story. Doctor. So Riyad is a doctor, right? So while I was going through all these things, prescribed me a medicine. So he was like, "Yo, I'm going to try and prescribe you medicine." This is like a couple of months ago. And then he prescribed me this medicine. So I go to the chemist, and the chemist asked me, when last did this doctor practice? Then I was like, I don't understand. What do you mean? Then he's like, this thing that he's prescribing you has been discontinued 6 years ago.
So you couldn't get your medicine.
I was like, okay, ish, all right, I'll have to go to my cousin.
Shame, man. Yes, sir. You're trying to, no good deed.
Yeah, no, that
no
is,
good deed goes unpunished.
The pressure. Let Riyad will tell you about the pressure because he's more under pressure than me.
Yeah.
Now, you see, look here, this is my way, my perspective slightly is more different. Like, I think in a social setting, Joey is always funny. And he can be funny immediately. Like he will naturally communicate in whatever way he communicates, whether he's saying something philosophical or he's saying something serious. For me, he comes across as funny, right? He has what we call funny bones.
Yeah.
Right? Now for me, I'm more analytical about stuff. So I go like, I'm going to be funny now. And then I decide I'm going to be funny. And then I'm funny because I decide I'm going to be funny because I know how to be funny. Right. But I don't feel I have funny bones. Right. So whenever I enter the social situation, I have an idea that I find it actually funny that I'm serious with people.
Yeah.
So from an analytical perspective, it's a joke for me.
You're almost looking,
like I'm being serious with you, and I'm having a detailed conversation.
You're almost looking at it from the outside and going, this is ridiculous. I'm not taking this terribly seriously, but I'm being serious with these people and it's stupid. I mean, Leanne is sitting here. She's listening to us now. All she can think is like, oh, good. I can get prescription drugs from Riyad. That's all she's thinking. Right, Leanne?
No. Yes. I'll tell you what I'm thinking.
I'll treat you with a venesection, a bloodletting. I prescribed leeches to Joey. back in the day.
What did you want, Leanne?
Some people might call me a hypochondriac, but now I've got a new thing to add to my list. I've never had my pancreas cleaned.
Yeah, no, we need that.
And this is concerning me.
Have it washed out.
Gotta make that appointment.
Yeah.
Like, who puts that together like that?
Yeah.
It's just the funny, the pancreas being cleaned.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous. Like, it's just perfect, you know? Like I would have never done that, you know, and said anything like that. But I think also because I'm from a medical perspective, you're almost like, this is how you say
gotta
things
be serious
and these
things.
Ideas
yeah,
go
yeah,
together.
Sure.
It's difficult for me to do. That's hilarious, and Joey does that all the time. And, you know, I don't know. Are you going to Google now cleaning a pancreas? Like,
I'm on it.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you this. It's diabetes type 1. If your pancreas isn't working properly, then you have to either or pancreatitis. Like if you have
pancreatitis.
Pancreatitis.
Titus.
Yeah. Pancreasitis. It's like appendicitis, but in a pancreas. Like tonsillitis, but in a pancreas. The pancreas is important.
All right. Yeah. No, listen.
So pancreas is a funny word also.
It's a funny word. It's like patella. Yeah. Like a patella. That's a funny part of the body. A patella.
Yeah.
A pancreas and a patella. That's like amazing. It's very amazing. You know what's a funny thing? Riyad also needs to tell them about because he's got the Rondebosch Medical Center.
Uh-huh.
Where also they give people free things, the old aunties.
Yeah.
And an oncologist. Tell them about your oncologist, Dr. Mu.
Which oncologist? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, when people go, no, we're going to go. Because I have a friend, her mother had cancer.
Yeah.
And then she went there to Rondebosch Muslim Center, whatever.
Center.
Riyad
Medical Hospital. Center.
And then she's like, no, can you just call your friend? Because I'm going to go there. Then I'm like, brah, they're doing it for free already. Now, what are you trying to tell me? Or like, I don't know if it's for free or anything. But she was like, no. But obviously, if you hear you have cancer, you are but you.
Yeah,
and then they went to. Yeah, so you get a bit nervous. And then they're like, no, we're going to go see an oncologist at your friend's hospital. And I'm like, my friend's hospital? Yeah, Rhonda
was giving away. Rhonda. He's giving away free chemotherapy. No Jesus. Wonder the hospital's doing so badly. Like, thank you. Give me the guy's name.
I'm just quick
to find out this, bruh.
I must quickly read this to you.
There's a doctor,
Robin, who listens to us. She said one of her favorite memories is sitting in the airport lounge in East London with her then 2-year-old. And Joey was the only other person there. And he played with her kid and they bonded over the Teletubbies, which is pretty awesome. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's lekker.
Yeah.
La la. Boom.
Angus bringing an obvious joke to the party. He says the humerus is the funniest part of the body. An unfused fontanelle can be problematic in adulthood if you make it that far. Yeah, okay. I don't know where that comes from, Tracy, but thanks for that.
That's just a random bit of medical trivia. Yeah, A fontanelle. You know, it's that soft part of the head in the baby where there's a triangle and it's soft and you press on it and stuff like that. Right?
Yeah.
When they
say, no, we must take your child to a tukum and we must make him a jumat. And in a bra press, yeah.
I love it. Listen.
And then they put the dot here, but a bra, a black dot, depending on where you come from.
Listen, you two are both big basketball fans, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Riyad can play basketball. I can only play cricket and soccer. But he can play basketball. And his son can also play basketball.
Akeen used to destroy us. At UCT met well at UCT
we is that to, Akeen we were Amatoso? Part
of a,
right
that's right, and he used to dunk on us like regularly and it was very embarrassing, right? But we used to play basketball when we should have been in medical lectures and we used to go to the anatomical pathology lectures steaming, you know, sitting in the back row with our basketball. And it was an interesting time. And I used to be able to play basketball. I actually was as unusual for like the Indian brasa with thin Indian legs to be able to jump and all of that. I could do all of that. But now on top of that, my son now at 13 years old is already destroying me.
Fantastic.
And I'm needing to use my size and you know, and my physicality, which is not like significant. So like, to overpower this dude, right? So it's like, it's that my days are numbered. That's all I'm saying.
No, dude, none of us are getting any younger. But Joey, how are your kids doing? Are they right?
My son is also at UCT. Mm. My son is at Michaelis School of Arts.
Oh, wow.
And he's doing a degree in fine arts. And then he just recently launched, shameless promotion here.
Go for it.
He recently launched his own clothing brand, and it's called Lai Jun King. You can go check it out, laijunking.co.za, and you can buy it's an online store.
Nice.
And then he dropped 2 songs on iTunes.
Yes,
so I have a son that's on iTunes and Spotify and all
phenomenal.
Those other things that I don't even know. So he's got 2 songs there. So he's doing very well. And then my daughter, she's here with me. She's also doing very well. Lekker. So that's that. And speaking about sports, my son, I wanted him to play rugby or cricket or soccer, which normal color people do. But then he did rowing.
There's no more waspy sport than that in the world.
Like rowing. And then he was a cox. He was the cox of the... He was a cox. So he comes to me and he's like, Dad, I'm a cox. I was like, yo, guy, what are you talking about?
You must have shut
He's like, no, it's a coxswain. I'm like, a cox, that's a bad word. How
exactly.
can you? Is there a thing like that? He's like, at least I'm not the stroke. Because there's a stroke and a bow in rowing. In a foursome.
There's a squat. Stroke and a cox, dude.
In a bow. In a skull. In a double. There's a double.
Rest.
Okay. So if you are double, then you're your own cock stroking yourself, but with a bow. The bow to the other guy. It's not, that's the rowing thing. Every week you had Rode Plat. The best thing about the rowing was when we went to Buffalo. Not Buffalo, the other one, Cowie River, where they do the boat race, like, you know, on the Thames.
Yeah.
So every year they had like this boat race, like it's the similar on the Thames.
Yeah.
Like that's where all the gold medalist people were.
It's called the Henley Regatta.
The regatta, that's right. Went to that regatta.
the cocks and the stroke. I'm sorry.
It is. There's a cocks and a stroke and stuff. So he did well in rowing. Oh, so he was like the vice captain in rowing and whatever. So that's, and but he's back at soccer. So I'm so glad.
Oh, thank God. God. Yeah.
Play soccer. Yeah. Don't
be the cocks.
Don't do rowing. Don't be a, yeah, the cock swain. It's a cock swain. A cock. You know, Stephen Hawking was a cock swain when he was still able to speak.
Shame, man.
Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Stephen Hawking before. Yeah, he was the cock swain of the second eight at the Cambridge University.
Phenomenal.
See,
Riyad is right. You are a mind of information.
It's an example of running over the line there. That's a perfect example.
I love it.
Just
listen, yeah. You two. Listen, we love you. I'm so excited about Material 2. I'm going to go and watch it on Box Office. That's where you can get it if you are wondering. And congratulations again on producing amazing stuff. Even with pandemics and all that other shit going on, everybody loves you guys. I hope you continue to have tremendous success. And I just love the friendship that you have as well. It makes me very happy. So go and be merry, both of you. We love you to pieces. Riyad, Joey, cheers,
thank
guys.
Thank you, bro. Thank you for having us.
What an
thank
absolute you.
Happy,
pleasure.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas
Merry
to you.
New Year. Happy
thank you. thank you,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, lekker.
All right. We love you both. Cheers. Bye-bye. What an amazing duo those two. God, I love them. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, when he's talking about his son and being the cocks in the rowing team, and how he didn't know what this was, and he was horrified. Can you imagine? I mean, that's like the waspiest sport in the world, Cambridge and Oxford, in the regatta.
I went to Henley on Thames.
Yeah.
Had no idea what it was until I was in the middle of it. Totally underdressed because you need to dress up for these things, you know?
Yeah. I was there in 2018 or 2019, one of those. Very, very wah-wah-wah. Yeah, so stand around.
Yes.
Oh, my God, there's Sarah Tompkinson Farfar. You know she's the daughter of Giles and Harriet. That's how it goes. Anyway, listen.
But there's no better after party on earth.
Yeah.
Listen, the after party. Oh, wow. Yeah.
But by then you're so exhausted. If you've been drinking gins all day, it's like you just want to get home. Ooh. And you've been in the sun. And even though it's English sun, you've been wearing a suit. So you're pretty much ready to go home at that point. Listen, it's been a fun year. And thank you very much, Ass and Mbulelo. But most especially, thank you to you for joining us on the show. Thanks to all of our guests this year. We've had some incredible people as a part of the festivities. And have a happy Christmas and an awesome new year. We will see you on the 10th of January. Be good, and if you're not, take photos. CliffCentral.com